The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Yes, last week people will remember the comedian Tony Cantwell placed Steal Like an Artist, 10 Things Nobody Told You About Being Creative by Austin Kleon on the Hard Shoulder bookshelf. This week it is the turn of former People Before Profit TD, Breed Smith. Breed, good to see you. How are you?
Thanks, I'm grand. Thank you very much.
So listen, thanks for coming in. I remember, you know, when you announced the retirement, we were talking to you in studio as well, and I asked you what you were going to do, and you said, listen, I'll still be involved, and I'll always be involved.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's the case. You know, there's so much going on.
There's a lot going on between the movement for against the genocide in Gaza. I'm still involved in climate stuff. And then, of course, there's the growth of racism around the country, which locally is a big challenge. And I'm involved there as well. And then poor Earl Richard got the throat cancer. So I'm doing his Dunleary clinic for him.
Yeah.
And following through, I hope, as best I can on that. Obviously, I can't replace him in the Dáil, but I'll do as much as I can the constituency. So we have a good team out there. There's a good team, and we're working on it.
Yeah, well, Richard actually was here before for the Hard Shoulder bookshelf and placed his own favourite reads up on it. I'll tell you what they are in a moment.
Ulysses was one of them.
He mentioned Ulysses. You can be sure of that. Don't worry about that. And listen, I know regardless of politics, lots of people will wish him well. And we're all conscious of what he's and his family are going through at the moment. Was this a hard task when we asked you to pick a single book amongst all the books out there to place up
on
the bookshelf?
Yeah, I mean, every time I read a good book, I think that's the best book I ever read. But I thought your research explained to me that it has to mean something, you know, pick something that means something to you, that has meaning. And I watched recently, again, for many times in my life, the To Kill a Mockingbird with Gregory Peck.
Oh, yes.
When I was a kid, my ma was mad about Gregory Peck. She thought he was absolutely gorgeous. And that was her favourite film. So we regularly watched that. But also we read the book at school. And it did have a big impact on me, because children don't really see colour unless, of course, they're being encouraged to be, prejudiced or biased against somebody. They don't see colour in other people. And To Kill a Mockingbird is a very dark story, but it's a very sweet story about the coming of age of a young woman who doesn't see colour and only sees decency and honesty in people. And what is happening in the background is a very dark scene of racism in Alabama in the early 30s.
Mm.
And it's extremely well done. The film's extremely well done, but the book is beautifully written.
Yeah.
And Harper Lee, who died a few years ago, she's very shy by all accounts, didn't give much interviews, and wrote a follow-up to that, but it was only recently published. I haven't read it. But I would recommend To Kill a Mockingbird to anybody who's concerned about the rise of racism, both here at home and globally, because it is happening everywhere. And it's really, from my perspective, you'd probably expect me to say this, I'm really encouraged that the people of Los Angeles are not taking it lying down, that they're resisting the deportations of their citizens that live there. So it's a book I'd highly recommend, not just for the past, but for the present.
I did read the follow-up, and I can't even remember the name of it or whether it was any good, which doesn't say an awful lot for it. Off the top of my head. But I do love To Kill a Mockingbird, so I'm glad it's up there on the bookshelf. Setting aside all of those, you know, important issues that it explores and the lessons, there's a great story at the heart of it as well.
Yeah.
And there's great characters. Like Scout is one of the great characters as a child.
Amazing, yeah. She's really inspiring. And you can see things through her eyes.
Yes.
You know, and she's so sweet. And innocence, the innocence really comes through, but the innocence challenges the danger and the filth and the bigotry that she's faced with, without her even realising she's doing it. It's quite wonderful the way they do it.
Yeah, it is brilliant. The you know that point about children not seeing colour. We've had all this turmoil in this country as well in recent years around IPAS centres, and it continues to be the case. Do you suspect children growing up? I mean, are you hopeful for the next generation that they're in classrooms? Kids are in classrooms right now as we speak. Mm. Well, not at this hour of the day. They were in them earlier in the day with, you know, other children of colour and children with kind of different surnames from them. Maybe the same skin colour, but Eastern European surnames. Experiences you and I really wouldn't have had growing up in Ireland, where it was all the same and everyone had kind of Irish names and was of the same stock. I mean, are you hopeful that will mean that they will maybe, there's a better chance they will grow up colourblind? Or is kind of the lesson of history actually they'll just soak it up from their parents, some of those prejudices?
Well, it's soaked up from society, from wider society. And there's awful filthy stuff on online nowadays, which is a further challenge for both young and older minds. And what do you make of that? And how do you filter your way through this, that and the other? What's lies, what's real, what's hateful, what's not? But I do. I have a few friends and a lot of family who are teachers, national school teachers, and it's a great experience to see those children mix and not see the colour and not let it be an obstacle. On the other hand, out on the street, that can be different, and they are picking up negative vibes, either at home or just generally or from social media. Yeah. So I'll give you an example. We do a regular Palestinian solidarity action in Chicor on the bridge. And one Thursday we were there with our flags, and we had children of all colours and sizes with us as well. But local kids were shouting across the road at us, "What about the Irish? F Palestine, what about the Irish?" Now, that's not something a child of 8, 9, 10 would say.
They're not sitting at home thinking about these things.
That's picked up, and that's sad. And that's why I think it's very challenging for teachers and schools now. But having something like To Kill a Mockingbird on the curriculum would be a healthy thing. I think 74% of American schools in the 80s had it on the curriculum.
Yeah.
Because it was a pushback against the rise of racism.
They're probably trying to kick it off the curriculum in some states.
Well, they banned it in some states, yeah, because it spoke about racial issues, and it spoke to the accusation of rape as well. Some of the very religious schools didn't want that, so it was frequently banned.
Yeah, so To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. Listen, pride of place up on the hard shoulder bookshelf, and a good pick. I'm sure plenty of people would be in agreement. People who read it in school or read it as kids, or people who have maybe read it more recently. It's all, like we said at the start, it's always difficult to pick a single book, so we allow kind of honourable mentions of another couple of books. Actually, this is what will I tell you what Richard picked as his books. I'll tell you now. His favourite book, this is on point now, 1984 by George Orwell.
There you go.
Honourable mention, he did mention Ulysses, of course, a Joycean scholar. For people who don't know, Richard is a huge fan of that book, and he's been on the show talking about it. He picked Percy Shelley's poetry, and he picked Lord of the Rings.
Oh, he loves Lord of the Rings.
Do you know who else picked Lord of the Rings? Two other people did.
Who else picked?
Two politicians. Yeah. Hazel Chew picked Lord of the Rings. Michael McDowell picked Lord of the Rings.
Go away, that's hard to believe.
I often think you'd make great bedfellows yourself and Richard and Michael McDowell there now. You could sit around and have a book club talking about Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, you can keep that thought to yourself.
So what book do you want to mention?
I've just recently finished the Wolf Hall trilogy by Hilary Mantel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. Like it. And she says in it, you're standing looking over Cromwell's shoulder, but sometimes you feel like you're under Thomas Cromwell's skin. And I really got to like him. I mean,
it's a real challenge for us, isn't it?
Of Oliver Cromwell. He's not the same, stock.
But no.
I really got to like him because he came from poverty, he came from violence, came from hardship. His father was a cruel, horrible man, a blacksmith. That doesn't make him horrible, but he was a drinker and very, very cruel to Thomas. But Thomas was bold and brave and talented and skillful and made it in life and became the big fixer for Henry VIII. Big fixer in many ways, but very subtly, very clever, very nice. And she's was such a great historian. Tragically, she died. But she all the detail, you know, about food, about how it's made, how it's gathered, what it tastes like, about cloth, about jewels, about gold, about, you know, how people dress. Really interesting stuff. So it's very absorbing, but most of all, I liked him.
Yeah, I had the exact same experience. I love that. I think it's my favorite. If I was ever on this slot being interviewed, I think it's the book I'd put up.
Really?
I just love them. And like that, the first kind of section of the first book, when you read it, that is the challenge, is that this character that I guess, because, you know,
we're not supposed
born
to like
of the Reformation and everything like that, we're not meant to like this guy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That kind of caused
this great schism with Rome, and it formed part of the narrative in Ireland. Another Cromwell for us to dislike.
Exactly, yeah.
And he's just how Hilary Mantel writes him. He's so relatable. He's an amazing character.
Yeah, he is. He's wonderful. And she obviously admired him.
Yeah.
But I think what she was also looking at was the period in history where the power of the church and the landlords was beginning to be broken down. because there's this new class of merchants and men and dealers coming in, and Cromwell represented that. Thomas Cromwell represented that very well.
Yeah.
Up until he got his own head chopped off.
Yeah.
Having chopped off a few himself, or manipulated the chopping off of a few. But it's brilliant. It's so well
done. Yeah, and that's you. But the whole way through, even if you didn't know the end, and most of us going to read it know how it ends ultimately, there's always the sense, the sword of Damocles is always hanging over him. You know he's going to come a cropper. Yeah. It's just the nature of the court he worked in.
And he has all these horrible enemies. There's really treacherous, horrible, nasty characters that are described so well in it, you know.
Did you watch the Mark Rylance TV show?
I did, I thought it was fantastic. He was great, wasn't he?
Yeah, wasn't he? That last episode, almost nothing happens in the last episode, where he's just being questioned. And there's about 40 minutes where almost nothing happens, and it's the most captivating television you'll ever watch. Yeah, it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good.
So anybody out there listening should watch it or definitely read the trilogy. It's brilliant.
Will I really worry you now?
What?
Mike and MacDougall picked that as well.
Yeah. Bedfellow, so.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said. What are you reading at the moment?
I am actually reading the selected writings of a character called John Molyneux, who unfortunately passed away a few years ago. And he was a member of my family. He was with my sister for a long time, and a great socialist, a great thinker, a great writer, a great educator, and a great activist. And John had great time. He was from Portsmouth originally, but he had great time for Dublin and for Ireland. He really loved his time here. And it was probably his most prolific period in his life, when he wrote most of his books and essays. Yeah. And he wrote about art, about philosophy, about economics, about imperialism, about class, and he did it wonderfully. He's so accessible.
Really,
great insights into sort of what people might think are harder elements of politics to absorb, but they're not actually. They're everyday things and everyday challenges, and John picks up the challenge so well. So I'm reading it. I hadn't read his selective writings before. I'd read other stuff he wrote, because he wrote loads of stuff on art and on philosophy, but I'm enjoying this because it's a selection of essays. You can dip in and out of it.
And is that why you're reading it? Because he was part of the family? Is that?
Well, it also helps me, equips me to be able to define my own thoughts and articulate how we need an alternative kind of world. And also to navigate your way around a very complex world we're living in now, because it is very challenging and very complex and hard to digest and frightening and worrying and all those things. And you want to have a good and a better understanding, so you can give positive vibes and know how to, what actions we need to take as, as activists, as socialists, as revolutionaries. We need to have a path forward.
John Molyneux's selective writings is what Breed is currently reading. Breed Smith, former People Before Profit TD. Breed, thanks so many for coming into us.
Thanks very much for having me. Thank you.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.